The following is a duplicate of Tape 2, Side 1, of an interview conducted with Billy Liu for the Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project.
Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Studies Center and Chinese Historical Society of Southern California, November 2, 1979, a second interview with Billy Liu, CPA, at his office in Los Angeles. All right, Mr. Liu, you mentioned in our first interview that you were being paid a sum total about $500 a month while working as a bookkeeper for the Produce Association.
Yes, I think that figure is a little high.
Yeah, and then how you added up was $250 from the from the produce.
Yes.
And then
I think probably another $100
from so yes. It didn't quite add up.
Right.
So it added up to about $300
is probably more like it.
Oh, okay. Mm. Fine. That's just to clarify. Mm. And that, you said, was considered an above-average income at that time?
Average income, I would say. I wouldn't say above average.
Mm. I see. And that was during 41 to 40, 57, right?
Well, okay. 57 would be, you know, more, because I probably was talking about the beginning there.
Oh, the beginning, around
right.
41, 40.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
There's one thing that when I was reviewing a tape, I said something about my mother coming by herself in 1912. Actually, my father was there.
Oh, I see.
Correct that mistake.
I see. Yeah. Did she ever tell you how she found the trip? Because she was 8 months pregnant.
Yes, yeah, she said she was practically seasick all the way. So when she was really happy when she finally got on shore.
Did they come to America at that time just to have you born here?
No, I don't think that was the idea. I think my father wants her to be here with him in his business and family. See, most of the Chinese were coming over here and earn a living and then try to return to China to live.
Mm-hmm.
But my father had a different idea and he thought he better bring the family over.
Because he liked it
yeah,
here?
Yeah, he liked it here, I guess.
Ah, I see.
Yeah.
How was his English?
He was self-taught. I think on my interview, the first one. Said something about that he's taught himself in English.
Mm, but was he good? Was he smart?
Yes, he was very good.
Ah, that's right. Mm-hmm. How about your mom?
My mother never did get too well along in English.
Mm. Okay.
She wasn't able to go to school, so she wasn't learning anything. Then I think she did have some missionary that was helpful. And came to try to teach her.
Mm-hmm.
But from listening to my brother and sisters and myself, she picked up quite a bit of English.
But
although
she never
expressed it, yeah.
To you, or how did she get on with the outside world?
Well, through us, as an interpreter.
What if you guys weren't there?
Well, she tried the best that she can do, and whatever she can do.
Did she say why she wasn't willing to go to school to learn English? Was it because she had to bring you guys up?
No, there wasn't any opportunity to go to school.
Oh, there were no.
No, you
night
can't go
school.
To school. No, my father, he wanted to go to school, but they don't let them go to school. Not the American school. Not the Chinese. They won't let them go to school.
Because they were Chinese?
Yes, right. For a
what
long
about,
time.
Say, an European immigrant? Could he or she go to school?
They would go to school.
Adult school.
Not Chinese, yeah.
Oh,
Was that a policy or was that unspoken?
I guess this is more a policy than anything else. Well, it might not be policy, as you say, because it's not state in law, but probably just practice, I guess.
Interesting. When did that turn around? When could Chinese adults go to
Well,
school?
I think probably in the 20s, I think in the beginning the... Of course, I remember in the 20s, you have some cousins that came over, and their age was about around 10 or 12, and they were able to go to the, what they call foreign opportunity classes, called that at that time, where they learned English as a second language. They didn't call it English as a second language then. They called it foreign opportunity.
And they could go to school free of charge?
Yes, public school.
Was it operated, did it operate in the daytime or?
Yes, it operated in the daytime.
Hmm.
And it was in the junior high level.
You mean they immediately went into a junior high
yes,
level?
Yes, well, they were around 10 or 12 years old.
But they had zero English. Eight.
That's right.
So how could they...
Well, they seem to be able to, you know, learn.
Mm.
In fact, there's quite a few the new immigrants that, you know, young teenagers that come over and attend those classes.
Uh-huh. And those classes were created especially for them?
Yes. And I think they're not only for Chinese, but there are some Mexicans and Japanese.
At that time?
Yes.
I see.
In these classes.
How about regular school? When were the Chinese allowed to go to regular, say, elementary school and junior high school,
well,
along with the Americans?
I think about the time of World War One, I think, probably in 1914-15, around that time, probably, we were allowed to go to school.
So
we
had
were
no
allowed
trouble.
To go to school.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I see.
But I know when my father first came, he wasn't allowed to go to school. I mean, he was a little older, I guess. They don't have any capacity for the older people.
I see. And when they did start allowing adults to go to these foreign
opportunity classes,
did your father go?
No, he's too old at that time.
Now, those foreign opportunity classes, were they for adults or were they for like 12 to 18
for
teenagers.
Years?
Oh, teenagers.
Yeah, in junior high school. Yeah.
When did they start having like what is now known as the adult evening school?
Much later. I think probably maybe even after World War II. I'm pretty sure you traced the history of these adult school for foreign students. It's much, much later.
You mentioned that you sent money to, or you helped people to send money back to China.
Yes, right.
Okay. How many people actually did that? How many percent of the people you had known were sending money back to China on a regular basis?
I think those people that have family back there, or relatives back there, they usually send money. Right.
Mm.
In small amount, and especially New Year, they were sent quite a few dollars back there, but then they spread around the relatives.
How about your
Year's.
Father?
My father was sending some back.
Irregular.
Yeah, irregular.
But
not for family purposes, it was families here.
So. Yeah, so why was he sending
yeah,
money?
Right. Just for some relatives, cousins.
Distant relatives?
Yeah, right.
When your father came over, did his parents were his parents still alive? I.e., your grandparents?
My grandfather was here when he first came.
Oh, that's
then
right.
Then he went back.
He brought your father over.
Yes, right.
Mm-hmm.
Then he went back and he died back there.
When did he go back?
I have no idea. That's an appointment I never had.
Was it after you were born or before?
I think it was before. Because I think when my father came back before I was born, when he brought my mother over, I think my grandfather left. Because he had my uncle and my father in the stores working. So he was, you might say, want to go back and let the two sons take care of business.
I see. And your father sent money to your grandfather then?
He probably did. Probably sent some money to your grandfather and some of my cousins.
Do you know when your grandfather passed away?
No, I have no idea.
Your parents never talked about their parents?
I never talked about them. Especially my mother's friends, I never knew anything about them.
Your mother never wrote to them?
I think she did when I was very young. I remember some letters been sent and correspondence, but I was too young to delve into it and see what it was all about.
And by the time you grew up,
right,
she,
I lost the contact. And I never did ask my mother about it.
What were many Chinese, in other words, they felt an obligation. Did they feel an obligation to help their family out if they could?
Yes, I think it's ingrained in them from the old Confucius teaching that they should help the, you know, the relatives.
Overall, do you think that the Chinese did well compared to the general population in Los Angeles over the last, say, few decades?
Well, in the early decades, I don't think the Chinese were doing that well.
Mm-hmm.
See, they were confined to Chinatown,
mm-hmm.
and there's not that much opportunity. The best opportunity they had was going down to the produce market and open the store there, because they were dealing with Caucasian. Whereas in Chinatown, it was only a trade with the Chinese.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and once they opened up the produce market, does that necessarily guarantee success?
Not necessarily, because it all depends on how well you operate the business, how efficient you are.
Did you know of any companies that went bankrupt or, you know, were not solvent, those that are involved in the produce business?
Yes. There was E&L Produce that went broke. That was
Chinese-owned?
Yeah, Chinese-owned. It was quite a number of years after after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
But most of them, in late years, sold out to other firms.
American?
Yes, to American or larger firms to absorb the space, you might say, in the market.
In later years,
take over the stores.
When was the later years?
Well, I think in the 60s, 70s, probably all gone.
I see.
These secondary jobbers, there's not too many left.
Secondary
jobbers? Yeah, secondary jobbers. Secondary jobber is a term that relates to the produce market. A lot of people don't understand what it means. Actually, what the secondary jobber does is they take these full containers of merchandise, fruits and produce, and pick it up in a smaller quantity so that the papa and mama markets can buy from them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to necessarily buy a whole crate of tomatoes or a whole carton of lettuce and a whole sack of potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And
that
provide a certain service.
And you said that the secondary drivers were no longer in demand? Is that it? Because
yes,
due to the decrease in mom and pop grocery
right,
shops.
Right.
I see. And so they basically disappeared by the
1960s.
70s. Since we're on this topic of breaking out or having opportunities, what did most Chinese consider were the ideal jobs back in those days, in the 30s and the 20s?
Well, I think, like I say, the produce market opened up an opportunity for them. And I think that's about where the most opportunity is.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the younger generation are looking into civil service more than anything else because there's no racial prejudice.
Oh, the civil service was considered an ideal job?
Yes.
Back in those days?
That's right.
I see. And what about later, like the 40s and 50s?
Well, then later on, probably in the 60s, the beginning to, you know, after World War II, we began to hire the Orientals. The big firm began to hire Orientals, and then there was more opportunity there. But
big
before
firms.
Then, most of the Chinese younger ones were interested in civil service.
Uh-huh. When you say bigger firms, what kind of firms?
Well, your aircraft firm, your construction firm, and not so much. I guess they are mostly in the aircraft industry.
Why is that
so? Engineering. They require engineers more than anything else.
Engineers.
The science.
What do you consider is an ideal job now?
Now, I think probably going to foreign trade, I think, is a lot of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you'll have to wait till mainland China really develop their industry so that we can export. And so we have trading like the Japanese doing, which is the opportunity, I think, for the future.
What about your parents? What did they consider to be ideal jobs? You know, in other words, how did they ever say, oh, I hope you become a doctor or something like that?
I think their way of thinking at those days, I think they're more like their children to be in the profession, like doctors and lawyers.
Those were just
and
like
dentists.
Is that what they said to you?
I think so. They never said anything to me as to what their thinkings are about,
at
what
one
the children
point,
want to.
You were considering to become an artist.
Yes, right.
How did they react to that?
No, there's no reaction as far as my parents are concerned. They seem to just like, whatever you're interested in, that's what you're going to be. But they tend to one thing, and I can say is that they like the children to go to college. That's one thing. Very in the mind, they want their children to be sure to go to college.
So did you all go to college?
Yes. Most of my brother and sister went to college, except one or two of them. One of my brothers, as soon as he graduated from high school, he went to commercial art. So he never did to go to college.
So he's the artist.
Yeah, he's the artist. To this day, he's still the artist. But
and the other one?
The others all graduated from college.
I thought you said two did not go to college. One only.
My sister. My sister never went to college.
Got married?
Yeah, got married, yeah.
Oh,
She was probably the reason why she never got to college.
She got married at 18 or?
No, later than that. Then after she graduated from high school, she was working at a grocery store and for maybe 2 or 3 years, and then she got married.
And your parents did not insist that she should go to college?
No.
Getting back to how the Chinese did, you say the early days they had no opportunity except to go to the produce market and have their own business, right?
Yes.
That was in the 20s and 30s.
Right.
Right? How about later? How did they compare, say, in the 40s and 50s to the general population, the trend?
Well, they have more opportunity with private industry,
mm-hmm.
and they also have opportunity to open their own business. Of course, a lot of opportunity are not able to handle because of the need for capital. Most of the Chinese and the early immigrants are poor.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, a lot of them borrow money to pay for the passage to come here.
Mm-hmm.
And after they got there, well, then they work and pay it off.
Right.
Today, the immigrants are the ones who are bringing in money with them.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So there are two different types of immigrants, you might say.
But I would like you to tell me how you think the Chinese immigrants over the last, say, the last 5 decades or so have done compared to the general population in Los Angeles, not discounting the very, very recent immigrants.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the Chinese as a race is more industrious than any other race.
Even the Jews?
Well, I think they're equally Jewish, or maybe more.
Because
mm-hmm. you can see in the Southwest Asia, they control most of the wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, over here in the United States, they have some thing that obstructing them because of the racial prejudice. So even if they did have the opportunity, well, they couldn't go up that far up.
So financially, do you think they have done better or worse than the population here in Los Angeles?
Well, in general, I think in the old days, they're poor.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, if you compare with the Caucasian, probably the percentage wealthier ones is more than the Caucasian, probably.
Mm-hmm. So you think they've done better later on?
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right.
What about the Jewish people? Did you ever make a comparison between the Chinese and the Jews in terms of doing business, in terms of cultural similarities or differences?
Well, I never did actually compare them with the Chinese, but I have in my mind that they're very similar in nature. And that they would strive for, you know, wealth, I might say.
Mm-hmm. Could you elaborate more?
Well, the Jewish would go into business themselves most of the time,
mm-hmm.
and the Chinese are very similar. They are given the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Do they run businesses the same way? Those Chinese
integrity
tend to be more,
you're talking about?
No, I mean the operation. Chinese like to use their own family members. Do you feel Jews also do that?
I think they do. I am not I don't have any opportunity to compare it that way because I don't know how they operate.
Have you heard of other people making similar comparisons? If your Chinese clients ever tell you about their experiences dealing with the Jewish people, or did they ever make any comparisons?
I don't know how to say it. But they always say they're tough businessmen to deal with.
Mm-hmm. But you haven't heard?
Trying to always cut them down as far as prices or whatever, you know.
Jews are trying to cut down the Chinese prices. Yeah. I see.
Of course, I think any businessman should do that way anyway.
Uh-huh.
Trying to get the lowest price
possible.
How about the Chinese?
Possible, yeah, right? How about the Chinese? The Chinese cut the other Chinese prices?
Right. Same way. Always trying to get a bargain.
Do you feel that the Chinese are a fairly united group, as an ethnic group?
No, I don't. I have a feeling that the Japanese people are a little more united in their efforts. I can see this right in Los Angeles. They have been able to get funds from the federal government to establish a low-cost housing for their elders right in Tokyo there in the high-rise. They were able to get funds from the CRA to redevelop Little Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
And here the Chinese have been sitting back and haven't done anything. There was several years ago, one group tried to get some fund for senior housing, and then another group came along and tried the same thing, so they're fighting each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, nobody won.
Do you feel this kind of infighting is typical of Chinese?
It seemed to be that way from experience.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to me this infighting, you might say, is not only in politics, but in the churches. You'll find that there is so many Chinese churches that, actually there's no need for it. They all believe in Christianity, and here they have each individual group. Probably the leader wants to, have their little territory.
Don't you think that's a religious difference rather than ethnic?
Well, it's not a religious difference because they all believe in Christianity.
But there are also American Lutheran and Baptist and Episcopalian and all those different churches.
Yes, but I think like Baptist Church, right? I think there's about two or three Baptist churches in Los Angeles itself.
Chinese.
Yeah, Chinese. It's not the religion, as you say, a different faith, you might say. Of course, I can see the Catholics and the regular, Christians. Catholic is Christian too, but others are
Protestants.
They're Protestants.
Yeah.
I mean that difference I can see because
you're
that's
not religious, what, huh?
Huh?
You don't belong to any denomination.
No, I used to belong to the Presbyterian.
Presbyterian.
Yeah, I was baptized in Presbyterian.
But you don't
go
anymore.
No, I don't go anymore.
How long have you not gone?
Oh, 40 years, 40, 50 years.
So you're agnostic.
My friend, when they ask me, I always say, I'm an atheist.
That's even stronger.
Stronger.
Yeah. What about any hostility? Did you feel that there were any hostility toward the Chinese by the whites, I mean?
Oh, yes, there is. When we were young, we know which place that, for pleasure that we can go. Like
dancing?
Yeah, dancing, for instance,
yes.
Nightclubs, some places we can go.
Are you saying that discrimination is a form of hostility then? Because those are examples of discrimination and they don't let you enter.
I think discrimination is a misinformation, I think, more than anything else.
And if
they associate Chinese, for instance, with Tong Wars and, bloody killing.
And is that what causes hostility?
Well, that's misinformation, as I say, because you don't know what the Chinese really are. They associate that they are hatchet men and things like that.